And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a great start to your day. Darren McFarland here in Rutherford County, down here in Smyrna, where I've been for the last two-plus months. Willie Donick over in East Nashville, Chase McCabe on the west side in Bellevue, and Marquise Munson anchoring things down at our Hosel Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, Hosel Inc. Game Studios, which is at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Doing well. Ready for another big day.
Yeah? Well, the weather looks like it's going to be a nicer day than yesterday. Sun is out. Although yesterday, it turned out to be fine. I think the rain was kind of done after our show, and it was basically nice the rest of the day. So, yeah, no complaints. No complaints at all. Let's
it was
start.
Very nice, and there was a little challenge issue to you guys. I don't know. I haven't heard any from either one of you guys. I heard from others that accepted my challenge.
I saw that challenge. I did see that.
Three of the five people responded and said, "Oh, I'm all over it. I'm accepting the challenge." There was a silence from a couple people.
So, you want me, knowing the type of shape I'm in, to run 3 miles?
3.1.
No, I didn't say you had to run. You can run, you can walk, you can bike, you can cover it anywhere you like.
I can get in my car, do that.
No, that's cheating. That's cheating, Chase.
You thought
that would not be in the spirit of the challenge.
I mean, geez, are you trying to recreate the New York Marathon? Is that what you're trying to do?
No, a marathon's 26.2 miles.
Well, I'm saying that she got in a cab and took it to
Rosie Ruiz.
Yeah, to about a mile left in the race and jumped out and tried to finish the race and pretended like she won.
Yeah,
until
well,
they
she
caught
did.
Her.
I mean,
well,
she won
until
the race.
Until they caught her.
Yeah, until they caught her.
Yeah, that's not in spirit of the competition, Chase.
I know. It was funny, though, in my mind. But okay, all right, I see your challenge. If I can do some walking, then I accept the challenge.
Walking, biking is acceptable.
I've been on some walks lately. Went to the park the other day. Good
yeah,
time.
See? It's not that far.
Takes all you're on a long, long walk. A long, long journey. A 3.1-mile journey.
I'll be dragging him behind me.
That's what, an hour tops? An hour tops? 3 miles? Less than an hour.
Walking? That's every bit of an hour. Longer.
Oh, wow. An
it's
hour.
Longer.
How
yeah.
can you walk for an hour? My
it's
gosh.
Longer. Longer. Definitely longer. Because I did it once, attempting to run most of the time, and I was under an hour, but it was pretty darn close. It's pretty embarrassing. But I don't do that stuff, as you know.
I believe in you
like
guys.
Like 45 minutes. I think that's what took me to do it.
Ike, you'd be done in 15, 20 minutes.
Yep. I could do the bike. We'll
I don't have a bike.
I mean, I'll even accept a treadmill or, you know, if you have access to a exercise bike somewhere.
Okay. We'll look into it and we'll report back.
Yes.
That's what Darren and I are saying.
So there's a chance you're not accepting my challenge. Do I need to find two other people
no,
to accept
that
the
is,
challenge?
No, nothing has been said of the sorts.
No.
Nothing has been said of the sorts.
Okay.
I just want to evaluate my options here.
We are just talking out loud. That's all we're doing.
Because you gave me an idea. I went to Centennial Park the other day and enjoyed that. I'm like, okay, I could just do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for 3 miles.
That's what I was thinking when I issued the challenge. It's like these guys, they're getting out. They say every day how
they're
nice it
two.
Is. Getting people to get outside, mm-hmm. encouraging people. So I'm like, yeah, I'll challenge my guys.
Okay, all right. No, we have got it on the table.
That.
We have a meeting after the show. We'll discuss it. It's on the agenda. It will be bantered around the Zoom room. We don't really have a meeting, but I'm just
I was about to say,
do we? It just sounded official.
It sounded good.
Right?
We'll call if you feel like you need to call a meeting. We can do that.
This was pretty interesting.
I mean, this came my way. This is actually called something It is for a good cause. It's a real cause. I went to the website. I made a little donation myself, but it's something. It's like a pass it on kind of thing. 5kforthefrontlines.com, just to help people. It's basically a food bank is where the money goes, and it's delved out to people in need. And, you know, they're emphasizing right now, as you can imagine, the people working on the front line. So it's like, you know, make a small donation. You're buying dinner for some people that are working hard out there and putting themselves out there during this time. So I got the challenge from Hal Gill. He got the challenge from AJ Malesko. So it's been passed on. It's a nationwide thing. So I have nominated five people. And as I said, I got three people, boom, right back at me. Joe Rexroad, Mitch Light, and Danielle Breezy, the weather person for Channel 2. Boom, they were right back at me. And then I just didn't hear from you guys. I was just, you know, I was wondering,
you know, we
wondering what's going on.
We bring up our business on the air and on the show. So we're just waiting for the show.
Yeah, man.
Okay, good.
Have you heard of content
so
before?
You guys.
You know, we do 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to save some of this stuff, especially in these times.
A wise person once told me, everything is content, even when I don't want it to be. Especially when I don't want it
to be.
Actually,
that is very true. Very, very true. Very interesting, and I'm going to switch gears since I didn't expect us Marquise to go this long on Willie's challenge. So I'm going to quickly switch gears. We'll save that. We'll come back to that in a bit because the pizza that we got into yesterday, there's been some investigation going on in Salt Lake City yesterday, but we'll get it. We'll have to save that. Because we've got a little bit of a lengthy clip that we'd like to play and then discuss. But I will give you guys props. I just happened to check in when you guys were talking to, help me out, Chase.
Eric Bischoff.
Thank you, the guest. And I heard Marquise jump in there and ask the question and his answer. And I'll tell you what, props to you guys for getting that. I don't know if that's news or not. I don't know if that story's been told. I don't follow the sport, so you guys would have a better idea than me, but that was news to me, and I perked up. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, for those of you that are wondering what Darren's talking about, so Eric Bischoff was the president of World Championship Wrestling at the time, which is the company that Dennis Rodman and Karl Malone wrestled for. They did the wrestling event after the NBA Finals. Rodman had done a couple of events with them already. WCW was owned by Ted Turner and Turner Broadcasting, so it was on TNT. So Eric brought up, you know, Marquise played the clip of Bob Costas basically just bashing wrestling. And
We'll play the clip because I honestly don't remember that. So that was really intriguing to me too. I don't remember Bob Costas
So to set it up, I was watching the game last night. I was watching game 6 last night and I was watching it, and this is probably around the third quarter. Jordan shoots a shot, you know, Rodman gets the rebound, and you know, Karl Malone and him are you know, jockeying for position. You know, Jeff Hornacek gets the ball, and they're already, like, on the other side of the court. And all of a sudden, you hear Bob Costas just screaming, like, Charles Barkley or Dennis Rodman just tripped Karl Malone. That's a flagrant. And then he just went off on this tangent. So I'll play the clip for you, and this is what this basically was the whole thing.
Rodman battling like crazy, but can't quite hold on to it. Hornacek, he and Malone, Rodman and Malone, and Rodman just trips Malone up. They got to call a flagrant here. They've got to call a flagrant. It's the third on Rodman. He and Karl Malone, regrettably, are scheduled to wrestle in one of those bogus events next month. Why Malone wants to lower himself to that is anyone's guess. And Rodman apparently wants to start the wrestling now.
Yeah, so
that's interesting on a national stage. Like, you would think Bob Costas was doing the Jazz game. I mean, that is rare to hear on a national stage the play-by-play guy saying, I don't know. I just typically you don't hear, you know, play-by-play guys that adamant right about something. Now that jumped out at me. And then to make the commentary like he did, that is even another thing you'd rarely get ever on the national stage. And I don't remember that. I don't remember him saying that. I don't know if that was made a big deal or not. But
well, they showed the clip in The Last Dance, but they didn't have. I don't think they had the commentary. But there was a clip in The Last Dance of Malone and Dennis Rodman, you know, battling each other and tripping each other and not letting go.
It wasn't tripping each other. It was all coming from Rodman.
Well, yeah.
Rodman initiated the whole thing. That's what he did. He was so good. That's why they call him the Worm. He got under everybody's skin. That's how he played. It was like a hockey guy almost in how he did it. The dark arts almost. He was a master at how to get away with it without like getting thrown out of the game. But he got tons of technical fouls and things like that. And I remember this time pretty well. Bob Costas was very critical of Rodman during that time. Very critical. And, rightfully so, he wasn't alone at all. I mean, you just don't skip practice between games. Like now, you know, it's justified because they won, and Phil Jackson was probably smart to go with it because that's the only way you could get anything out of Rodman. The Spurs had learned that the hard way. You know, they tried to get him in line, and they couldn't, and that's why they basically, you know, they traded him away for pennies on the dollar based on what he was worth. Because they just couldn't deal with it anymore. So Jackson was smart in for doing that, but for a traditional teammate, you know, Rodman was getting bashed, rightfully so, for all these antics that he was doing that went beyond his greatness as a player. And Costas was right at the forefront.
Yeah.
I remember he came to Nashville, and I went and saw him speak. George and I did. We had him on the show before to promote it. We got a chance to meet him briefly after, and part of his speech was going off on Dennis Rodman. I mean, just you know how Bob Costas is. He's got a lot of ways with words. He can really make a strong point. He bashed him.
Yeah, and then as you referenced, Darren, Eric Bischoff brought up the fact that WCW was owned by Turner, and so Harvey Schiller, who was the head of Turner Broadcasting, that I think he was mentioned in The Last Dance, at one point early on.
He was.
Yeah, so Bischoff brought up the fact that he had to be careful because the NBA, of course, had a deal with Turner. His bosses are Turner, and so he had to be careful with what, you know, he pushed and could do. But he said to Rodman, he goes, you know, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying if you were to maybe get a couple of jabs in on Malone, you know, that could be cool. That could be good. That could set up some things. And so it was almost like he was telling him, hey, jostle with Malone. And to the credit of WCW and DeBischoff, he got exactly what he wanted, because even though Bob Costas was bashing wrestling, he brought up the fact that they had a wrestling match, and so in a sense it worked.
It absolutely worked. That's the whole point of that.
Yeah.
That's why it was a fantastic, so good job by you guys getting that out of him. I thought that was very, very interesting to hear him say that he had basically had a conversation with Dennis Rodman saying, hey, it wouldn't hurt if maybe you could kind of, you know, set this wrestling match up by maybe, you know, don't, you know, he was very careful with his words, I noticed in the interview. It's not like he was saying, you know, don't do anything to hurt the game, or he was basically saying, but you know, if there's something that happens just to kind of show that there's bad blood between you two to lead to the wrestling match, that wouldn't be a horrible thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, and it played out, and then Bob Costas went on a rant. I mean, it's just, to me, it's a little bit comical, and we don't have time to go down this rabbit hole, but to act like, you know, Dennis Rodman's the only player to ever be like this. I mean, we've had players like this for decades and decades and decades and decades on successful teams, you know, but it's not like Dennis Rodman created, you know, this persona and a party like mentality.
He took it to a new level, though, you would admit.
Terry Crisp can tell you all about players that he played with that did the same thing, that just had no notoriety whatsoever.
Right, but not skipping practice, not leaving town to go to another city, or taking a, quote, vacation during the year. That was new level, you have to admit. Rodman, there's a lot of rebels, for sure, that would show up not at 100% and did things to hurt the team, for sure. But Rodman was next level.
He was. He definitely had his own category, for sure. And it's a credit to him.
I've still never heard of somebody taking a vacation in the season, during the season.
Well,
that's a new one.
During
it's
the
a
NBA
credit
finals,
to him because that's how good he was because he could get away with it. That's the thing. He forced for most teams, if you weren't good enough, they would never allow it. You would be gone. You just that would be it. You're done. You get
not
it's like Keyshawn Johnson. You get fired right in the middle of the season. You get told, get out of here. We don't want you anymore. But it's a credit to him of how good he was that he was able to pull that off. He was actually able to get away with that stuff because he brought it. In right. between the lines, it when it was game time, he brought it.
He did, but it still set a terrible example for if you're trying to, you know, coach a team of kids or high school players or college players. That's not what being on a team is supposed to be about.
Yeah, and I would say your 86 Mets wouldn't be a great example either, but they want, you know, went to the World Series and they were pretty good. So,
well, definitely not. But they were a great team when it was time to play. They showed up and played. I don't know that anybody, you know, did what Rodman did. Just completely defy the manager. Just completely blow off any kind of team rules. Take a vacation in the middle of the season. I don't know that there's any guys on that team that did that. There's been some wacky guys on plenty of teams. You mentioned the Broad Street Bullies. I mean, characters of the game are part of it.
You don't think Lawrence Taylor?
Wacky personality.
You don't think things were hidden about Lawrence Taylor? I mean, come on.
That's a good one.
I mean,
that's
Lawrence Taylor, give me a break. But Bill Parcells, who doesn't make exceptions for anybody, made an exception for Lawrence Taylor. Okay, I guarantee you.
No doubt.
I'd love to see
no
the 30 for 30 on Lawrence Taylor and all the dirt that was hidden, all the stuff that we don't know about him.
I did
but
hear
guess
Bill
what?
Belichick.
He showed up to play.
He did. But I think I did hear Bill Belichick tell a story. The two Bills, I think it was,
yeah.
where
mm-hmm.
yep.
Belichick had Lawrence Taylor. I guess he was way late to a meeting or missed a meeting. And Belichick was going to discipline him. And Bill Parcells came in there and said, what are you doing? Did I hear you're suspending LT? What are you doing? That's not going to happen. We got to
right.
have LT out there.
That's what I'm saying. Let's not act like Dennis Rodman's the first. Lawrence Taylor, if you're great,
no,
you get away with that stuff. Lawrence Taylor was great.
Right.
If he was, average,
at least
he would have been booted. He would have been
true.
Cut.
True. No question. But Rodman was next level.
Yep.
Like I said, I just don't think it got out about Lawrence. I mean, don't tell me he wasn't doing. You know, he may not have been hanging out with Carmen Electra, and he may not have been going back and forth from Vegas to New York, but I would say there's probably some pretty incredible stories about LT during his playing days.
Well, HBO, I think it was HBO or Showtime, did a documentary on LT a few years ago, and there were some pretty good stories in it.
Yeah. So. All right, we're late to John Glennon from The Athletic. We'll come back and talk to him on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Marquise, always with the good music. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We now say hello and good morning to John Glennon from The Athletic. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you very much.
Or is it belated happy anniversary? You made it another year.
That.
How about that?
It is. Big day for the Glennons yesterday, so we enjoyed it.
Nothing like a quarantine anniversary.
Yeah, we went all out, all kinds of restaurants, quick jet out to the Caribbean and back. It was crazy.
Oh, I know these guys are going to get into some of the things that you and your colleagues have been writing at The Athletic. I'm just going to ask you just some Titan stuff and let them get into the articles. We've been kind of talking about if you just look on paper, I've said it's hard, I believe, to make the case that this team has actually gotten better in the offseason when you think about losses of Jack Conklin and, you know, Logan Ryan and Jarrell Casey and Dean Pease as the defensive coordinator. It's really hard to me on paper to say that they're a better team. And now Delanie Walker's out of the mix, and so now it's all up to Jonnu Smith. But with that being said, it doesn't mean that they can't be a better team. Guys are going to have to then take the next step, right? They're going to have to increase what do they bring to the table. Who are a couple of guys you would identify that they need more production out of to help them be a better team in 2020?
Well, you know, I think you mentioned, you know, probably a couple of them there. I think like Jeffrey Simmons, I think is one, you know, everybody appreciated what Jeffrey brought to the table last year. But I think he's going to have to up it a notch this year because he's going to be essentially moving into Jarrell Casey's old position there. And as much as we saw out of Jeffrey Simmons, we have to realize, too, that he had no offseason, no training camp. And then I think you're going to see a 10 to 20% better Jeffrey Simmons coming up in 2020 than you did in 2019. And remember also that he's been training in the facility this whole time during the pandemic. He was allowed to do so because he was always recovering from injury. So I think certainly he's one guy. And then, you know, the cornerback spot, they're going to have to make up. And I think, you know, in general, you can say rookies. You know, one clearly at the corner spot. How much is Christian Fulton going to be able to give you there? Considering the fact that it's going to be a shortened off season, probably not as much time to learn as you'd like ideally. But can he be, you know, can he replace what Logan Ryan was giving you? And can Jonathan Joseph supplement that as well as a depth corner? And at right tackle as well, you know, is Isaiah Wilson, you know, as much as they like Isaiah Wilson, I think there's a little bit of a rawness to his game. And again, with a shortened off season and maybe not as much time, hands-on teaching, is he going to have enough to be right there in that starting lineup and be a, you know, powerful part of that starting offensive line as you would like to replace Jack Conklin? Or are the Titans more going to kind of hold that spot with say, a Dennis Kelly until Isaiah Wilson is ready to roll? So, you know, I think those are certainly some of the guys. And, you know, I think a guy like an Adam Humphries, too, we saw some flashes from Adam Humphries last year, but, you know, he missed a lot of time with injury. So I think the Titans are really looking forward to getting a boost from him as well. And hey, as well, as long as we're on wide receivers, I think Corey Davis, you know, has to have better numbers than he did last year. You know, we know that they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, but, you know, there's still a talented guy there, and it was disappointing, I think, for the Titans to see a drop in numbers for Corey last year. So, you know, I think a jump back to where he was at least in the previous year is going to be expected.
You know, free agency is truly hit or miss. Sometimes it comes up big. Sometimes it really doesn't. I mean, I think they like a guy like Brian Arakpo, right? I think that worked out. You would say that was good for them. A guy like Cameron Wake last year, it was good at first when he was healthy, right? I mean, he looked very good. What do you have, 2.5 sacks in the Browns game to start the season? I mean, he got off to a really good start, and obviously his body didn't hold up, and injuries plagued his season. So overall, it didn't work. So that's usually how it works, and that's for every team in the league. So here we are with Vic Beasley, a position they desperately need to get production out of. Whether Clowney comes here or not, they're still going to need him to be better than he's been in Atlanta, minus the one season. So what do you think they truly have in Vic Beasley, and can he be one of those free agent signings that's a hit?
Certainly has the potential, I think, to be a hit. You know, and I think what the Titans are counting on is that the tools are there. That, you know, the speed is there, the ability to get to the quarterback from the edge is there, but it certainly hasn't been consistent during his years in the league. You know, he had that great year, certainly, second year in the league. I think he had about 15 sacks and I believe led the league that year, then dropped to 5 in consecutive years, and last year was back to about 8. But, you know, I think what the Titans are kind of banking and hoping is that, you know, this is a position outside edge rusher or linebacker. This is a position that Mike Vrabel played and played pretty well over the years. You know, so if anybody can get this guy, you know, back on the path that he had earlier in his career and getting a more consistent production from, it's going to be Mike Vrabel. So I think that's what they like. I think they like the raw ability. Now it's just a matter of making sure that motor is always going. You know, as I say, that they get more consistent production. I think it's a chance. I think it's a little bit of a risky pickup, to be sure. But, you know, it's a one-year deal, so they're not strapped in too much for Vic Beasley. You know, and I think, again, if you can get something from Vic Beasley, I think that opens things up also more for Harold Landry, too. You know, I think the more pressure you can get from the other side, that frees up Harold Landry to potentially be even more productive than we've seen from him.
Talking to John Glennon, who's covering the Titans for The Athletic. And, John, you had some really interesting points about the whole Logan Ryan situation. And first, I want to get your thoughts, because you use it a lot, and that's Pro Football Focus. And you're not the only one. There's a lot of people that use that service. And you do have some people that, you know, just like with any analytic service, you can go to any sport and any angle that analytics are used, and you still have some people that will challenge some of those things, rightfully so. But you point out in your article that, you know, every team looks at this stuff. That, you know, they don't completely blow it off. So it has to be a factor. But tell people how you try to use Pro Football Focus as a tool.
Well, you know, I think what I like most about it is it kind of goes beyond, you know, sort of the traditional stats. And that's sort of what I used it for in the Logan Ryan story. You know, if you look at the more traditional stats for a guy like Logan Ryan, you look at a career year without question. You look at a guy that you say, hey, how come this guy wasn't in the Pro Bowl? You know, he had 120 tackles. He had career bests in sacks, you know, passes broken up, forced fumbles, etc. So you kind of scratch your head and you're wondering, okay, you know, why isn't any team signing this guy, you know, for $10 million or whatever? Where are the big contract offers? Why aren't the Titans more interested in bringing him back? That's when I think, you know, kind of more advanced statistics, a deeper statistical pool like Pro Football Focus comes in handy, because you can see sort of the other side of the coin a lot of times. And in Logan Ryan's situation, you look at some of the negative numbers that were attached to him last year. Most receptions given up by a cornerback, 80, and that was 10 more than the next highest. Most receiving yards given up. Most yards after the catch given up. And even when you went to strictly plays, you know, from the slot, a slot cornerback, the numbers were similarly high as well. So I think, you know, you use those stats, those kind of stats that go a little deeper, and the more traditional stats to kind of give you a full picture of what the player is. And as you mentioned, Willie, I think in the early years when, you know, Pro Football Focus was coming out, I think there were a lot of skeptics and doubters. But I think they've proven themselves pretty well over the years. And I think teams themselves are certainly using a lot more analytics and deeper dives these days. And I think that's a reason, you know, when you look at a guy like Logan Ryan, you know, it's not just that the Titans haven't re-signed him. It's that, you know, nobody in the league has re-signed him. Maybe that's because his price is too high and the teams are looking at this complete picture, not only at those traditional stats in which he really excelled last year, but some of the other stats in which things didn't go so well for Logan Ryan.
I think it's an example of how things have evolved over years, for sure. I think there was a time where those eye-popping stats, and they were eye-popping, the conventional stats, would have absolutely equated to a bigger contract. But I think teams have definitely changed how they evaluate because they have these tools here. But let me challenge a couple of the numbers, John, because sure. I think this is where if I'm Logan Ryan, I'm going to say, okay, well, what about this? You mentioned he gave up more in the cumulative yards, like more completions, more yards. But as you pointed out, he was on the field for so many snaps, right? So that's going to have more chances to give up completions and yards. And they obviously threw at him more. So how did that work relative to others? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying he's the best cover corner in the league, but when you're out there so much more, you're going to give up more.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, you know, I always look at the comments after my articles as well, and a couple of readers brought up that point. They said, you know, how did that factor in, the fact that he was on the field, you know, close to 100% of the time always? And I went back, and you know, Pro Football Focus, again, does a pretty good job of breaking down those kind of stats as well. It's, you know, like snaps, or excuse me, receptions per snap he was on the field. You know, and even then, when you break it down a little further, still doesn't necessarily go in Logan's favor in that way. I think you know, I don't have the stat right in front of me, but I want to say it was about a reception per every, I want to say 7.8 snaps or so. That figure sticks in my mind for some reason. And when you compare that to other corners in the league, honestly, I think at a corner who had played at least 300 snaps last year, I think that ranked 90th, tied for 90th out of 93 in terms of, you know, the frequency of the times that passes were completed on Logan Ryan's watch compared to others. So even factoring that in, and then, you know, honestly, some of those numbers did surprise me as well, because, you know, certainly we all saw Logan put up some great plays last year. But really, even when you factored that in, the time he was on the field, you know, those numbers did not go well for Logan Ryan. So again, I think it's a complete picture. I don't think any NFL team or any fan should just say we're strictly looking at, you know, Pro Football Focus. But it rounds out a profile of a player, I think, you know, in addition to what you look at in the more traditional stats.
Yeah, it's a really interesting debate that I think goes on in every sport, because the eyeball test is still valuable, right? And also,
sure,
the real answer, probably, if you're John Robinson, is to go to the coaches and starting with Mike Vrabel and say, did he do the job that right. we were asking him to do, despite on what the numbers might tell you one way or the other, positive or negative? And going forward here, what's he worth? But I think it's fascinating that, as you mentioned, it's not like everybody else is beating down the door to pay
right.
him even the same that he made last year.
Yeah, and he made it, you know, very clear. You know, I assume through his agent that word got out that, hey, I'm willing to play on a 1-year deal. All I want is, you know, what I was making, $10 million. And this was after that, you know, the first big wave of free agency, and that announcement didn't open up the floodgates, you know, by any stretch. You know, when you look at, you know, what corners are making around the league, I looked at it a minute ago, and it seems like there's about, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 corners who are going to average $10 million or better for next year. Some you look at and you say, wow, I'm surprised that he's getting that. Others are more recognizable. But, you know, I think the point is, if you're going to pay a guy that kind of money, you have to recognize him not only as being an important part of the team, but as being one of the better cornerbacks in the league. Now, can you, you know, you can make an argument for Logan Ryan, again, using some of those other statistics. He was a stat stuffer without question last year, you know, and we remember certainly some huge plays, including the pick against Tom Brady. But there were obviously two, an awful lot of receptions surrendered. So it's an entire picture. And obviously, as you mentioned, I don't think, you know, it would be one thing if the Titans balked at $10 million and five other teams were battling it out, and, you know, setting a new market for them. But that hasn't been the case so far. So I think the other teams, too, are taking a look at the complete picture of Logan Ryan.
John Glennon of The Athletic is here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And John, Darren started this interview with asking, you know, your opinion of this team and how they got better, and you know, whether you can say that they are better than they were last year. One position that they needed to address, and it was something that was brought up quite a bit, was that backup running back position. I enjoyed your piece that you did on Darrington Evans from App State and the small town of Oak Hill that he's from, and playing at New Smyrna High School. But as I've learned more about this young man, because let's be honest, I didn't cover App State football, I didn't watch App State football, so as I've learned more about him, I feel like that he truly is the type of running back they were looking for to complement Derrick Henry, that can be that change of pace and have different roles. So what were some other things that stood out to you when you were learning more about him?
Yeah, I like everything so far, what I'm hearing about Darrington Evans too. And what I really thought was important, as far as the Titans are concerned also, was in talking to some of his former coaches at App State, you know, both of them made a point to talk about how, you know, smart this guy was in terms of he's the kind of guy that would you know not only what the running backs are doing, but what the wide receivers are doing as well, the kind of guy that gets an entire picture of the offense. And in addition, you know, the kind of guy who picked up on pass blocking very quickly as well. You know, I think one of the assistant coaches I talked to said, you know, he really saved us a few times in picking up hot guys that were blitzing the quarterback. And that's key, obviously, for the Titans, because in order to get on the football field on third downs especially, you have to be able to protect if, you know, you're useless to the team if you can't protect on those passing situations. So I think that's one thing that struck me was his intelligence, and one maybe because the Rubik's Cube has been around since I was a youngster, but this is a guy, Darrington Evans, that figured out the Rubik's Cube in about 2 days or 2.5 days, he said. And about two decades for me, I'm still working on getting one side of that thing put together. So, but that was one thing that stood out was his smarts. And then I think obviously the other is just the explosiveness for Darrington Evans. You know, I think the stat that really stood out to me was over the last two seasons, 11 runs of 50 yards or more. That's a lot, in two seasons. And I think that combination of, you know, if you get Derrick Henry pounding on you for about two-thirds of the game, and then all of a sudden you get this 4-4 guy coming in and flying through those same kind of holes, and I'm not saying that Derrick Henry is slow by any means, but Evans has a different gear. I think that's really an ideal compliment. I think I'm really looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table.
What do you think a realistic workload would be for him, though? I mean, you mentioned Derrick Henry, you know, pounding on you. You want to get as much out of him as possible, similar to what you had last year. But, you know, and he's playing right now, at least, on the franchise tag. So you have that he might be trying to prove it again. But what do you think the realistic workload for somebody like Evans will be?
You know, I don't think it'll be a ton in terms of running the ball. You know, my guess, you know, and it probably varies from game to game, of course, as well. You know, if Derrick Henry is for some reason struggling, maybe Darrington Evans gets a few more runs. But my guess, just off the top of my head, would probably be, you know, no more than, say, 5 to 10 carries a game. But, you know, I think the Titans probably would be hopeful of at least, you know, 2 or 3 receptions per game in the early going. And again, you know, if Darrington Evans starts to show some real explosion, you know, you get him on the field a little bit more. It's a good problem to have. Hey, do we go with the NFL's leading rusher, or do we go with a guy that, you know, has some real explosiveness and really has shown he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield? I think that's a pretty good situation to have. And remember, too, that when Darrington Evans came to Appalachian State, there was a question as to whether he was going to be a wide receiver or a running back. And I think really for the first season, he did a lot of whether it was slot or, you know, wide receiver. So I think there's a little bit of that background, too. And maybe, you know, if the Titans can tap into that, you know, maybe get a little versatility out of Darrington Evans as well. And who knows, maybe get both those guys on the field at the same time.
Good stuff, John. Appreciate the visit, as always. Best show you've watched to this point while we've all been indoors is what?
Oh, goodness. You know, it started out as Tiger King, but by the end I was so disappointed in humanity. I can't go with that for Tiger King. I'll have to go with Ozark.
Yeah.
We're on the verge of finishing up Ozark tonight, I believe.
So. Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
It's going to be a big night.
Okay, so how many episodes? Just the final episode, or are you going to try to knock out a couple episodes? Where are you in season
3?
No, this
is the final episode tonight for Ozark. So I'm looking for big things to happen.
Pour a drink, your favorite drink, put it right next to you, sit back, you and the wife, and relax and buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride, my friend.
Okay, can we ask John the question that we debated a couple weeks ago, Darren, as you and I crossed episode 9? Since it's fresh in your mind, John. I thought episode 9.
Oh, okay.
Was extremely
very
compelling.
Disappointed in episode
and
9.
Darren wasn't a big one. I thought it was brilliant.
10 will blow your mind. 9 I did not like at all.
Give me a little hint of an refresher on 9 so I can.
Okay, on 9, 9 would be
Wendy and her brother, right? Is that
brother.
Right?
Oh,
yeah,
the brother.
It comes
right.
to a climax with the brother.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And I think now, I may be wrong going into 10, but I'm thinking Bro is still around. That's my guess. You know, they left it as kind of that up in the air that looked like Bro was about to get killed. But I'm thinking her brother there is a pretty able guy when it comes to defending himself. So I have a feeling he's going to be around, and there's still going to be a lot of volatility left in her brother. That guy's kind of scary at times. So I'd be surprised if I don't see him in 10 tonight.
I yawned a couple times in episode 9, too much time sitting in the grocery parking lot. I promise you, you will not yawn episode 10 tonight.
Darren, you've got to get into the mind of the character. It's not all about action and running around and you know, shooting people, whatever. The mind games.
In my mind,
the decisions.
It is.
this is what stimulates me. I think John he exercises his mind. He's mind. I think he can appreciate the conversations going on in the car.
Well,
I thought those are good. Yeah, the brother. Now, just promise me, if you can, that we won't see any repeats of, what was it, episode 5. You know, I guess that has sort of continued the storyline between Darlene and the youngster Wyatt. Is that going to scare us again in episode 10?
We cannot.
It's quite creepy.
We cannot confirm or deny anything. Yeah. All bets are off in episode 10. I'm just going to leave it at that. To finish out season 3, all bets are off.
All right, I'm ready. I'm going to settle in about an hour, maybe. I think at this point I can't hold back anymore.
Say, you're not going to make it to tonight after this.
No, I'm breaking out the bourbon right now.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, John, for the visit.
All right, thanks, guys.
John Glennon from The Athletic. I loved Ozark. That's been my favorite to this point, even though there's a line that I use all the time in Peaky Blinders that I can't use on the air. That's my favorite, too. But anyway, we'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Scott Burnside coming up to kick off the second hour of the program. We'll talk about where the NHL is with their comeback, their attempt to complete their 2019-2020 season. So we'll get into all the details with Scott Burnside coming up in about 10 minutes or so. A lot of you are working from home. We know during this pandemic you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That is a really good option. You can also enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can live stream it from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Logan Ryan. That was a subject that was brought up in that interview. It was something that was brought up yesterday with Teron Davenport and today with John Glennon. And, Willie, I know you seem to be the one that wants to keep going down this path. Why?
Well, I think it's a classic case of why analytics, regardless of whether it's Pro Football Focus or Baseball Prospectus or Hockey Abstract, you know, you can go to any sport and look at this stuff and you can trace back why some of this stuff happens. There was a day in time where Logan Ryan would have had an easy time getting the same or more money at this stage of his career because of those traditional stats, for sure, and because he lights up all the lights with the intangibles, right? He's a great team guy. He's a leader. He's everything you want in a professional. But it shows you the influence that these stats have. He's getting to an age where it's hard to maintain the level of productivity that you have. And you have some of these analytics telling you that despite the great traditional numbers, there are some flaws in his game. And so what's he going to look like next year, and what's that worth? You know, you guys have all seen the movie Moneyball. It definitely has some of that to it, don't you think? And they used the same philosophy in their decision they made with Jarrell Casey, right? And it's a shame. It's really tough for a player like Ryan to accept that, I would think, because he's doing everything. He's done everything that they asked him to do for those 3 years. And he's sitting there going, I'm not an old man. You know, I'm 29. I'm not 39, right? I can still play. But the history shows, and this doesn't mean it's going to be the case for Jarrell Casey or Logan Ryan, but the history shows that once you get to that age, the odds are that your production is going to start declining and not maintaining, right? So he's caught in that trap. It's a classic debate on what is a player at that age of his career, at that position, worth. And so it's hard to comprehend, I think, on the surface for a lot of us, especially for a team that has the money to spend, right? If they really wanted to do it, they have the – it's not like they're saying, well, we just don't have room. We'd like to have Logan Ryan, but we don't have room. They could make it happen if they wanted to.
That's why I didn't love, which we talked about a lot, I didn't love, you know, basically how it got out that, you know, I don't want to – I don't know if it was a demand. I don't – that may be a strong word. But just the fact that, you know, he seemed to be hell-bent on, hey, I've got to make at least what I was making in this last contract, if not more. I mean, obviously he wants more, but as the days have gone by – we know that's probably not realistic at all. By the way, how about the report about a week ago that it looked like it was imminent that he was getting ready to sign with the Jets, and here we sit a week later, and he hasn't signed anywhere. So don't know what's going on there. I just – it's a – what you said is true. Does it mean it's going to play out that way? No, it doesn't mean it always plays out that way. It just means more times than not, teams are more cautious – when you start getting to a certain age, especially in a very, very physical sport like football. Doesn't mean that every time somebody hits the 29 or 30 threshold, they start declining and going downhill. No, we see examples all the time. I mean, we used to put running backs out to pasture at 30. Adrian Peterson laughed at that. There have been others. Carlos Hyde has laughed. Or Frank Gore and those guys have laughed at that notion. So
Frank Gore is the poster child for
right
that,
right so happiness. It happens,
but the point is that they're rare. They're relatively rare. The
we
guys
used to
who
never
really
think
last that long.
A 43-year-old would be a starting quarterback in the National Football League. Well, guess what? Tom Brady is, and now Drew Brees is 40. So I mean, we're starting to see things. They are the rare exceptions. They're not the norm, and so that's why I didn't love him coming out. To me, when you get to a certain point, just understand that it's going to be natural for teams to be hesitant, because if they're looking to spend that type of money, more times than not, the first options they're going to be looking at is whether it's fair or not fair, and whether it's a good idea or not a good idea is probably the younger guy, right? If you're going to pay
Bingo.
That kind of
Bingo.
Money, you're looking for the younger guy. So you have to understand that when you're in a position like Logan Ryan. Like I said, he may still have three really good productive years left in him, but I didn't love the fact that that got out. However it got out, whether it was him, his camp, however that got out, that he was looking for the same or more, that he wasn't going to accept basically less than his last contract, I didn't love that. You can't take that approach, at least publicly. Don't do it.
Right. Younger and cheaper is a huge, huge thing, especially in the salary cap. And even in baseball, which doesn't have a salary cap, you've seen over the last couple of years a lot of veteran players that are sitting there on the free agent market saying, I can still play. You know, I had 20-something homers last year. I drove in 80 runs. I might not be in my prime, but I'm worth something to somebody. And there was a time where teams would pay good money for those, but now they're trying to get younger and cheaper because there are analytics that are telling them you can do this. This guy's not worth what you think he's worth or what you used to think he's worth. I think that's happening to a lot of players like Logan Ryan. So you couple that with Logan Ryan setting the bar, like the point you're making, Darren, and that's why he's finding it very hard. And I'm not saying that's fair to Logan Ryan necessarily. Because I think, like I said, he's a consummate professional. It's got to be extremely frustrating for him. But it's just the trend in sports. Younger and cheaper and get more value for your dollar. Save more and have more flexibility in your salary cap to spend on a guy like Derrick Henry or your quarterback or wherever you feel like you have the biggest need.
Well, especially when you have a general manager like John Robinson that's showing us that he's willing to you know, go about it similar to how the Patriots have done it over the years and, you know, cutting bait with someone when they still are, you know, in their prime or still have some prime years left. I mean, he's not afraid to do that. We've seen two examples of it this season. Logan Ryan that we're talking about and then Jarrell Casey is mentioned earlier. So that's just kind of the way it is with him, but it's a system that he feels is effective and it's one that he's learned from. So And if it continue, if this team continues to get better and make the run that they did last year, then I guess you can't question it.
It is very difficult, and I'm not envious of general managers, but is the slippery slope of trying to make sure you're not caught into that. Don't get caught up in the they've done, you know, basically rewarding them for the past, because sometimes rewarding a player for the past is a cool concept, but whenever they have a decline, and let's just say the decline is heavier than you anticipated, the fan base, at first they're excited, and then they're no longer excited about that, right? And so you don't get any style points for rewarding a player when he was probably underpaid and giving you way more value than what he's worth, and then you kind of reward him for years past. It doesn't play out that well. It just doesn't. And so,
but in the moment, it's tough to do because of how popular
tough.
Guys like Casey and Ryan were.
That's why
were.
I said, I'm not envious when you have to make the tough business decision of, okay, let's really sit down and think about this model. Okay, what is he going to be in, let's fill in the blank, years? Is it going to look the same? Is it going to be better? Is there going to be a decline? If the answer is decline, we can't do it. If we all believe in this room, it's not going to be the same or it's not going to be better. As much as we like this person, as much as we appreciate what they've done, how do we do that? Like, as a business, the answer is you can't. And I don't know what their answer is. Clearly, their answer is they don't believe that he's going to be better or probably even the same, that he's not going to be worth the money to them. Or maybe it was just simply they had to pay other people and they had to make a tough decision. And sometimes that's how it plays out too. Like, we love you. We'd love to give it to you, but we have a cap. And unfortunately, we had to make a very, very tough business decision, and we had to pay younger guys.
Yeah.
Or pay
and
other positions.
The Broncos believe that Jarrell Casey is still worth the money, or else they wouldn't have traded for him, let alone actually give up a draft pick to get him and inherit that contract. The other part of the equation with Logan Ryan is, what will he get eventually? Somebody's going to sign him, but what will he end up getting?
We will come back with Scott Burnside to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.